You're tuned to Perspectives, a weekly public affairs show which airs every Saturday right here on KTEP. And we're joined this afternoon by Roger Friedland. Dr. Friedland is a sociologist who studies love, sex, and God. He's a professor of religious studies and sociology at the University of California, Santa Barbara, and New York University. He's also the co-author of The Fellowship, The Untold Story of Frank Lloyd Wright, and The Taliesin Fellowship with Harold Zelman. And his recent book is Amore, An American Father's Roman Holiday. Dr. Friedland, thank you very much for being with us.
It's my pleasure to be here.
And as we were talking before the program started, I mentioned that you teach at the University of California, Santa Barbara, and at NYU. Right now you're at NYU, correct?
That's right. I'm teaching in media, culture, and communication at NYU.
Now, Roger, at the beginning of the interview, I said that you're a cultural sociologist who studies love, sex, and God, and you teach that at the University of California and at NYU. What do you mean when you study love, sex, and God?
Well, I do this at a number of levels. Number one, religion has been overwhelmingly concerned with the regulation of our sex lives. On the one side, and in the monotheisms, the relationship between human beings and the divine is often understood as a relationship of love. And so I'm interested in the way in which people's religious feelings, their beliefs, their practices shape the way in which they live their intimate lives in terms of how they practice sex and to what extent they can join this with various forms of intimacy and love. That's on the one side. On the other side, I'm also studying political religion, the way in which religion is being politicized around the world. And all of these movements, whether it's the Christian conservatives in the United States or the Muslim militants elsewhere in the world, the Hindu nationalists as well, are enormously concerned with how do we regulate people's erotic lives and how do we clear up what they're interested in doing very much is, number one, clearing the public space of all of the sex, and on the other side, to control people's bodies, particularly women's bodies.
In the book that you wrote, Roger, it said that you were a little concerned about what you saw at the University of California, and especially when your girls came along. Why is it that you would want to take your children to grow up in Europe instead of here in the United States, where it seems in Europe, when people think of Italy or France, they think a lot more of open love?
Well, first of all, to be frank about it, I went to Rome because I love Rome. I love the fizz of everyday life. I like the fact that flirtation is everywhere. I like the emphasis on beauty. I like eating all the different pastas. So let's put that out there first.
Okay.
To be honest. But in terms of one of the things that motivated me was to get away from the hookup culture of, you know, American young people, where it's easier for a woman to have oral sex than it is to have an intimate conversation with her male partner. And so you talked about Haight-Ashbury and the summer of love. And so what's happened is there's been a reversal. So, you know, I went through that summer of love. Personally. So for us, you know, the thing that was that we took for granted was love. The thing that was the adventure was sex. The thing that was uncertain was sex. And today, for young people, the thing that they take for granted is sex, and the thing that is uncertain and almost unbelievable for a significant percentage of them is love. And that really concerned me. That really bothered me. And so in Italy and in Rome in particular, the ideal state is still this state of passion, which is this conjunction, the coincidence of love and sex. And in the United States, become much more acceptable and much more common to have sex, which is pretty anonymous. So I found that problematic, and I thought that Rome was a place where there would be more romance. And the other thing that was problematic for me was the dissolution of so many American families, so many people that I knew and that were the parents of the children that my girls were going to school with were having a hard time keeping their their families together, and it's a very, very high rate of divorce. And, you know, in Italy, the divorce rate then, which was, you know, over 10 years ago, and still now, even though it's gone up, is exceedingly low by comparison. So I thought that the strength of Italian families and the importance of love was were two things that were very attractive about Italy compared to California.
What you just talked about at the beginning about you love Rome, you love the culture, the pasta, the people. You have a story and you share that in your book. Rome, to you and your wife and your family in particular, goes back a long way because you went to Rome by yourself and then you honeymooned there with your wife. And then you went there to mourn your fathers when they passed away. And then there also is when you decided to have a family.
That's correct. You know, we went to Deborah and I have, you know, always been very drawn to Rome. And, you know, we went there, both of our fathers died, and we went there immediately afterwards, because I had a job teaching at the European University Institute. And, you know, we had been unable to have children for, you know, 10 years. Before we were able to, Deborah was finally able to give birth. And Rome was the city in which we decided that we would, you know, try again one more time with assisted fertilization. And I don't know what Rome had to do with it, but that was where that decision was made.
What about when you decided to take your children there? Because as you mentioned, there were a lot of things going on back home in California, and you're right. I remember growing up also, and I was an oddity because my family was the only family that was together. There were a lot of other families where they were single parents. The children didn't know who their fathers were, or the father was someone who just came by once in a while and left money. And I was fortunate and blessed that my family, I was brought up right and taught values and stuff like that, but I can see your concern among your girls and your family because, let's face it, and I'm not trying to make anything up or say anything, but California has always been almost like the root or the birthplace of different things.
Well, I don't know the statistics for California, but, you know, just based upon, you know, the level of separation and divorce in our world, you know, it's quite common, and it has, you know, a lot of effects. And one of the effects I see as a university professor, I tell my students that, you know, if you're from a family that where your parents separated or divorced, you know, it's a liability in terms of academic success. So if you've gotten to the university, it's an achievement. It's not only your achievement, but the achievement of your parents. So, you know, one of the things that is happening in the United States and in other places in the Western world is that we are creating a mass of young people who are growing up in a fatherless world. And, you know, there's this really interesting work that was done before Hitler came to power in the youth hostels of Germany. And the researcher who went around these youth hostels, he found a longing for a strong father figure who would right the wrongs in Germany and unify the German people. And what was fascinating about this was that wasn't just on the right. It was the socialist and communist kids, as well as the right wing fascist kids. And what did they have in common? The people who were yearning for this, they had grown up without fathers because their fathers had been killed as soldiers in World War I. And I think that the role of fathers is enormously important. And although Rome is a society which is very much controlled by mothers in terms of family life, you know, almost all children there grow up with fathers, and I think it makes a big difference.
We're visiting with Roger Friedland. Roger is the author of the recent book, Amore, An American Father's Roman Holiday. The title, Amore, and particularly An American Father's Roman Holiday, you sort of touch upon that in the book about the movie Roman Holiday with Audrey Hepburn. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that for our listeners' sake?
I mean, there are a lot of links to Audrey Hepburn. One of them was that Audrey Hepburn lived in Rome. She fell in love with a Italian psychiatrist after doing Roman Holiday, and her presence is everywhere in Rome in various kinds of ways. But at the same time, Audrey Hepburn ultimately, was left by her husband, who, cheated on her, apparently. And I didn't write about that in my book. I found about that later. But, one of the people I knew talked to her husband, who told him, we asked him, he said, well, why did you leave Audrey Hepburn? You know, she's perfect. And he said, yes, exactly, she's perfect. And so one of the things that's really striking about Rome is, this desire for a certain measure of imperfection, a desire for an imperfect beauty. It's really fascinating the way in which the Romans don't take their lives to be pure as the ideal state. And so Audrey Hepburn became a symbol for many things for me in Rome.
So Roger, would you say that perhaps, like Audrey Hepburn's ex said, that she was too perfect? Is it something that, as human beings, we're always looking for? That's why the forbidden fruit is looks so tempting, or, we have something that's perfect, and so we're perfect, and so we want to experience a little bit about, the dark side, or if you want to call it that.
Well, I think if this question of perfection is tied up with why our marriages tend to break apart. I think that we have this notion of this pure love. And if it doesn't measure up, it can be, it's not sufficient, and it's to be discarded, and you start again. And one of the ways in which you see this is in terms of infidelity. So, Italian families are very strong, but by comparison to American families. But they also have a very, very high level of infidelity, much higher than anyone's ever found in the United States. And the infidelity is now, equally on the side of women as it is on the side of men. And it's fascinating. The United States infidelity is often a reason to end a marriage. In Italy, it's not, and Italians can live with infidelity and recover from infidelity without destroying their marriages, whereas we will more often end our marriages as a result of infidelity. I'm not saying infidelity is the only cause. Infidelity is often just an indicator of other problems. But I think it's a fascinating difference. And I'm not suggesting, not promoting infidelity, but the cost of ending these relationships because of infidelity are all these children who are, growing up without two parents.
Roger, why is it that it appears that way, or it is that way? Because as you stressed earlier, women play a vital role in Italian families, and not just in Italian families, but in Mediterranean families, Latin families, there's always that matriarch. And you don't hear too much about the matriarch in, say, Anglo-American families. Yes, perhaps grandma is strong, but it's usually the father or grandpa. Whereas you mentioned in Italy and some others, we always hear about the matriarch. In The Godfather, and of course that was what, unfortunately, that's the stereotype that some people have of Italian families. But the matriarch, Mrs. Corleone, was very, very faithful to her husband, to the family, and everybody else.
Well, one of the things that's really striking about Rome is the power of the mother. So most Italian men call their mother every single day. One-third of them see their mother, you know, like once a week or something like that. The Italian boys, the sons, grow up very, very much tied to their mothers. And their mothers have this extraordinary power in the societies in terms of family life. They have incredible power. In the United States, it's not legitimate in the United States to value motherhood, to value maternity in the same kind of way. And in the United States, the phrase "just a mother" is something that many women don't want to be, whereas in Italy, there's no such thing as just a mother. A mother is something awesome, something powerful. And, women in the United States have lost that power that comes with maternity in society. Now, it has its serious downsides in Italy, and that is that, Italy is Italy is a very sexist place in terms of the economy, in terms of politics. This is not an unadulterated benefit. I mean, there's every world has its costs.
We're speaking with Roger Friedland. Dr. Friedland is the author of the book Amore. He is also a professor of sociology and studies love, sex, and God. Professor of Religious Studies and Sociology at the University of California, Santa Barbara, and New York University. And his book is Amore. And this is a book about taking his daughters to Rome when they approach adolescence. And Roger, as far as when you decided that, you say in your book that one of your daughters, Sarah, I think, started crying and she really didn't want to make the move. But take us to that step. Once they got there, what did you tell them, the reason that they were there, and what did they experience?
Well, the Sarah, who was very shy before she went to Rome, broke down in tears and didn't want to go. We were taking her away from her known world. Hannah, who was very aggressive and extroverted, she was excited to go. And the consequences were exactly the reverse for Sarah. It provided a place where she learned how to be assertive and to joke with boys and to express herself in public, and it made her very, very autonomous. For Hannah, on the other hand, she had a much more difficult time with the boys in Italy, who would call her a nerd and would be very aggressive with her, would want to cheat off her papers, and she would say, "You can't do that," which is what every good American kid is trained to believe, that your achievement is your responsibility and you should be rewarded for it. Well, that's not the way Roman boys are taught to be. No one wants to be the first in the class. And Hannah was the first in the class and she suffered for it.
Now, what about Now, okay, they're obviously young women. So looking back, have you been able to talk with them as far as their experience and what they thought? Did Dad do the right thing? Or how did they turn out? Are they still living in Europe or are they back in the States?
Oh, no, they're both in the United States. And, you know, one is trying to work in just starting out in the film business. The other one's just finishing college in Massachusetts. And, you know, we talk about Rome all the time. And, you know, Hannah's still recovering from Rome. It was a place that was very difficult for her. And in retrospect, looking back for her, she wishes that it hadn't happened. For Sarah, on the other hand, it was the greatest thing that ever happened in her life. And she, you know, sees her photography, her dance, her sense of story very much having been shaped by her time in Rome. And it's exactly the opposite of what we expected. But, one of the things I've learned as a father is that, you know, the main thing that you can do is, you know, love them and make sure they look both ways and they cross the street because, you know, who they become is very much out of your control.
We're speaking with Roger Friedland. Roger is a professor of sociology and religious studies at the University of California, Santa Barbara, also at New York University, and he is the author of the recent book, Amore, American Father's Roman Holiday, and how he took his daughters out to Italy once they reach adolescence. Now, Roger, looking back now, did you accomplish what you intended to accomplish?
You mean in living in Rome?
In taking your girls over there. And I know you write about that in the book, your experience.
I don't know what I intended to accomplish, to tell you the truth. I think that going to Rome had a lot of positive effects on the self-confidence and the autonomy, and most importantly, the imagination of my daughters. I think they think more deeply as a result of having been there. I think they're more open to other ways of being and understanding, have a greater ability to understand people that are different than them from having lived there. So I think net, it was a positive experience. I don't know exactly what I intended to have happen. I do know that they are both romantics, and, you know, are very much oriented towards love and, you know, seeking love as one of the great, experiences, and the, what I still see is the thing that, you know, when you die, that will be the red thread in your life as to, you know, how and who you loved.
It's interesting. That's what the Beatles said in their song, "And in the end, the love you take equals to the love you make is equal to the love you make."
Yeah, I like the Beatles. What the Beatles have to say in that regard. There are many, many songs and many many novels and many movies that say the same thing. The striking thing is that, you know, in the Academy, talking about love is like bringing out a Valentine card. It's seen as something that you shouldn't take seriously. No one takes seriously. And I think that's wrong.
Well, as you mentioned earlier, and this is something that I experienced in one of my classes, my announcing and voice acting class, where I asked them to bring a love song, and they were to interpret the song, not sing it, but, you know, do an oral presentation, dramatic interpretation. And a lot of them had trouble saying we couldn't find a love song. A lot of the songs they brought were songs that were about sex, were about, not treating women the way they're supposed to be treated. And as you mentioned earlier, that it was easier you know, for women to do certain things as opposed to, you know, hold hands or talk in public with a member of the opposite sex?
Yeah, I think that, you know, if you go back and you listen to Motown, I love Motown, I use it to exercise, and, you know, it's filled with tenderness. It's filled with enormous tenderness. If you go back and listen to, you know, I Heard It on the Grapevine by Marvin Gaye, you know, he says, he talks about his tears, and because, you know, the woman that he loves may not love him back. I mean, that kind of vulnerability is much more difficult to find now. You know, it's more, it's tougher, and it's much more physical, and it's much more about, you know, the flash, the spasm of sex and conquest and things like this. And it's sad. I find it sad. And I think, you know, I think that we in the United States have spent so much time on sex education. I think that we have to have much more emphasis on sentimental education, on education about love, because, you know, there's all these places for people to, you know, learn how to cover their genitals and rubberize their genitals, but, you know, there's very few places that young people can talk about their hearts, that can talk about their existential concerns, about, you know, the possibility of love, or the impossibility, or the conditions for, or what it means. And, you know, this, in my opinion, this is the truly religious question that we face in our society today.
Well, Roger, we want to thank you very much for taking the time to be with us here today. We've been visiting with Dr. Roger Friedland. Dr. Friedland is the author of the book Amore. Amore is an American father's Roman holiday. Very interesting read, and especially if you have daughters or young children, is something that you want to read. And he has a website also, and you want to give us that website real quick, Roger?
It's a community Facebook page. It's R.O. Friedland, F-R-I-E-D-L-A-N-D.
Thank you very much for being with us here today.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
We've been visiting with Roger Friedland. He is the author of Amore, an American father's Roman holiday. Perspectives is taped and produced at the KTP Studios, University of Texas at El Paso Communication Building. Our thanks to our engineer, Norma Martinez. You've been tuned to Perspectives. I'm Luis Sanz.